It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Of course, today we're working with World Concern to save lives with the 44-cent cure to stop river blindness and ultimately death for millions of people. We'll get back to that as well. It is a real pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Louis Rosenberg, who is a, well, not just a PhD, but the CEO of Unanimous Artificial Intelligence, featured in National Geographic Channel's Year Million. Dr. Rosenberg, thanks very much for taking the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell me what Swarm AI or Swarm Artificial Intelligence is, because I haven't run into the term before.
Yeah, so Swarm AI is based on a natural phenomena called swarm intelligence, which is nature's way of amplifying the intelligence of groups. And what nature does is form systems that allow groups of organisms to be smarter together than they could be on their own. And it's really the reason why birds form flocks and fish form schools and bees form swarms, because they do that to amplify their intelligence and make better decisions and are better able to survive. And so what Swarm AI is a technique where we can do the same thing with people, where we use AI algorithms to combine the knowledge and wisdom and insights and intuition of groups of people to enable the group to form a swarm that will produce more accurate predictions, better decisions, basically allow the group to become an artificial expert by amplifying their collective intelligence.
I'm glad to hear it can be done, because, Doctor, I've always heard that people can be smart, but that crowds can be awfully stupid. From time to time, we've seen how crowds react to things versus the individuals within those crowds who actually are pretty smart people. But as crowds, they may not be as smart. Does it apply to humans as well as insects and animals?
Yeah. So part of it is how you aggregate the input from groups, and humans, very often when humans aggregate our opinions in kind of a mob mentality, then you're absolutely right. A mob can degrade the intelligence of a group and can behave worse than the individuals. If we model the process after the way natural systems do it, like birds and bees and fish, we can actually produce groups that amplify their intelligence constructively. And at Unanimous AI, we've done lots of research where we have groups of people do predictions together as a swarm, and they become much, much more accurate when they're working together as a system than any of the individuals would be on their own.
Is that because it rounds off the edges, that is, the extremes of opinion within that group of people, maybe sort of rounded off at the edges so that you don't get the wild swings of opinion on things?
It's part of it. What we do, since we're using AI algorithms, we're really collecting as much information as we can in terms of diverse sets of knowledge and wisdom and just intuition that people have about things. And we're finding the solution that optimizes across all these opinions. And it absolutely does get rid of the extreme edges, but it also it also fills in the gaps in each other's knowledge. An example, here's a concrete example. We were challenged by Newsweek to predict the Oscars. And that's a hard task. And so what we did was we formed a swarm of 50 people. And these 50 people were just average movie fans. And what we did was first we asked them to predict the Oscars on their own, just as individuals, and they were 44% accurate, which isn't great, but it's hard to predict the Oscars. There's a lot of categories. Then we had them work together as a swarm, and the same group of 50 people jumped all the way up to 76% accurate.
Wow.
In predicting the Oscars. And we interviewed those people, and we said, well, how many of you have actually seen all the movies? None of them had seen all the movies. But they fill in the gaps in each other's knowledge, and the algorithms look for different levels of confidence and conviction and converge on the answer that optimizes their collective knowledge. And it allows a group to be significantly smarter together. And again, it's a process that was really inspired by nature. Nature figured out how to do this with other organisms, and with AI algorithms, we can give that same benefit to people to allow groups of people to function like experts.
I'm talking to Dr. Louis Rosenberg, who you'll recognize from the Nat Geo series Year Million. He's also the CEO of Unanimous AI. So when Nat Geo proposes to try to show what it would like to be a human a million years in the future, are we that sure that we're going to be around a million years from now?
That's a great question. And the six-part series from Nat Geo goes through, the future of humanity, looking first at the near future, 50 years, 100 years, a couple hundred years, and then they go out to the far future. And the word million, when they say year million, is more figurative than literal. They just mean the far future. It's not necessarily a million years, but the expectation, and they interview lots and lots of experts, is that humans will be around in the far future, but we might be pretty different as our technology starts changing us over the next 100, 200 years. We now that we have the ability to modify our biology with editing genes, and we have the ability to interface with computers in deeper and deeper ways, the different visions that experts give in the Year Million show starts to have humanity looking pretty different when you get out further and further into the future.
Hey, Dr. Rosenberg, let me ask you this. You've given us an example of how these algorithms can work when you take an average group of movie watchers and an average task like predicting the Oscars. Does it also work with the real smart end of the spectrum? If we got 50 physicists together, could we maybe come up with a unified field theory that actually works and fills in all the gaps? If we got 50 cancer specialists together, could we come up with better cancer cures than each one of those 50 individually?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. What we find when we build a swarm intelligence of a group of people is that the swarm will be smarter than the individuals on their own. And so if you start with average people, you will build an artificial expert. If you start with experts, you'll build an artificial super expert. And we've done experiments like that. In fact, we built a swarm of Mensa members.
And, oh wow!
And we ended up with a swarm that outperformed even the individual Mensa members. And so it definitely works that way. And it's a way to basically amplify the intelligence of any group, a group of experts, a group of novices, and what you find is that that group, when they function together as a system, will be smarter than those individuals on their own.
So, Doctor, let me ask you this. Does it scale up? In other words, if 50 people can predict the Oscars, I think, at the swarm rate of 74%, does that mean that 500 could get to 80% and 5,000 gets to some higher number? Or is there a peak, or is there a leveling off somewhere?
Yeah, that's another great question. And the answer is we don't yet know. We were doing the research now where we try bigger and bigger groups. And, we've done groups of 50, 100, a couple hundred. And the groups get smarter, but we do see it tapering off at the larger end of the groups. And it could be the case that at a certain size, you have a diminishing return. If we look to nature and for example, bees, bees make decisions all the time as swarms. But even though they have 10,000 bees in a colony, when they swarm to make a decision, they usually only use 300 or 400 bees in a decision-making process. So it could be that nature shows us that it doesn't scale up infinitely. That said, the Year Million show from Nat Geo contemplates this issue and looks to the future where you could imagine a future where our groups of people are thinking together by the thousand, by the million, a billion people could potentially think together as, an extreme superintelligence. And so that's definitely one of the theoretical possibilities in the far future, but it's still not proven yet that increasing the size will continually increase the intelligence.
Dr. Rosenberg, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for taking part in that Nat Geo series, and we appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. Dr. Louis Rosenberg, the CEO of Unanimous AI. We'll be back in a moment with your calls at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. One of these days, all of us hopes to be able to save somebody's life, maybe an individual's life. It'd be nice to be the hero one day. How would you like to be the hero today? Well, David Harms joins me from World Concern, and we've been raising money for them because what we want to do is save lives. There are parasites that kill between 3 and 4 million people worldwide. many of them, if not most of them, are children. And David, there's a way that 44 cents, a simple pill, and a little bit of clean drinking water can not only save a child's life and ensure that they have a healthy lifetime, but also provide them with the water, simple, clean water that'll keep them from getting sick again.
You know, the one of the hardest things for me to communicate is the simplicity of it. It's almost like, really? That's that simple? And the answer is yes, it is. We have the medicine. We know what it takes. What we have to do is get it where it needs to go. And we need the funding to get it there. Every $44 means another 100 kids get this medicine. It's like an antacid tablet. It goes on their tongue. They swallow it. It kills the parasites. They're eliminated. And they go from maybe a fetal position on the floor, which I've been in huts in both South Sudan and Haiti where this is the case. You give them the medicine, and 24 hours later, they're up and playing soccer. I mean, it's a miraculous kind of a transformation. They typically get the bad or the parasites through bad drinking water. So we're going to deal with that as well in the long run, providing clean water and sanitation. So we cure them and we keep them cured. Let me give you a quick update. We had somebody that said, look, here's $3,000. Go ahead, double every gift until at the top of the last hour. We came up just a little bit short, but I'm going to extend this for, what, 8 more minutes?
Sure.
8 more minutes, and we still need about $1,100. So can you jump in and be part of a doubling opportunity? Twice as many kids get the medicine if you give $440. Now, 1,000 kids would normally get cured with that. Now it's 2,000. So the number is 888-544-5448. 888-544-5448. LarsLarson.com has the link as well. You got about 6 minutes here to get about $1,100 raised so we can double that and cure more kids.
You know, I was also thinking, too, that there's a kind of an arrogance about Americans that makes me a little uncomfortable because I hear people say, well, how come these people are bathing and using the same place they get their drinking water from for a toilet? And then I just took a couple of airplane flights to go down to Baton Rouge to do a broadcast. You know how often I walk into the restroom in an American airport and see someone who's just exited a stall and they walk right past the sinks and don't wash their own hands? And I'm thinking, don't be that arrogant. Yes. And think how long it took human beings to figure out what it was that was making us sick. I mean, before Louis Pasteur and others, we didn't have any idea. We thought it was bad vapors or, not making the right sacrifices to God or whatever. In any case, it'd be nice to help save people. We're a big, rich country, and it's nice to help save a life for 44 cents. It's the 44 cent cure, 888-544-5448. That's 888-544-5448. Let me go to Doug in Bellingham. Doug, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network, and thanks for listening on KGMI. What's on your mind?
My pleasure, Lars, and thank you to your audience. I want to say that the only way we're going to move forward is for both Democrats and Republicans to recognize that there's truth on the other side of the aisle. And like the professor was talking about, swarm intelligence, the more that Democrats and Republicans listen to each other, genuinely listen to each other, the greater the benefits of swarm intelligence will be, because that's essentially democracy is a swarm intelligence type of thing where the group is smarter than the individual.
So how do you make that happen, given that when Obamacare was written, President Obama promised that it would all be done in public on C-SPAN? He famously made that promise. He then rejected all attempts by the Republicans to take part in the process until one final event where they included the Republicans. And Paul Ryan famously schooled Barack Obama on how Obamacare was fatally flawed from the beginning, and they were not included. Now, this time around, the Republicans have been saying, we want your ideas. Why don't you join with us? And the Democrats have said, no. We're not going to take part in it. Now, they're griping from the sidelines now. We don't know what's inside this thing. But they've also turned down every entreaty that came from Trump and from the White House to get involved in rewriting this thing. And I think even they know it's a disaster. You know, here in the Northwest, the insurance commissioner in Washington State is projecting at least one rural county in Washington State will have no insurance company providing a policy at all. For one county in Washington State was two, and now I guess it's down to one. And the premium increases forecast for Washington State are 22% next year alone. So how do you get the other side to talk when the other side doesn't want to play ball?
Well, first of all, we have to stop demonizing the other side.
Well, if the other side won't, hold on. I will demonize them for this reason. You tell me not to. If you had two friends who were fighting, say you knew a couple, and the husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend are not getting along, and one side says, the guy says, or the young lady says, I'm willing to talk to him. And you go to your buddy and you say, why don't you sit down and talk to her? And your buddy says, I'm not saying one word to her and I'm not listening to one word she has to say. Why shouldn't that attitude be demonized?
Well, the attitude, yes, but not the person, not the people.
Well, what's the difference? What's the difference? I mean, if you say my buddy isn't a bad guy, but he's behaving badly. What the heck's the difference? It's six of one, half dozen the other. If he won't talk, if he won't engage, then he's the bad guy in that, because if you're right, you do need to get people talking to each other. But when one side says, we're not going to talk to the other side at all, and I'm going to remind you that 7 years ago, Republicans were begging the president for an opportunity to throw some of their ideas in on Obamacare. You know, and the president, he had four members of the House leadership write him a letter. And I had Congressman Greg Walden on this program describe it. They wrote him a letter and said, Mr. President, you've talked about doing this publicly. We'd like to come over and give you some of our ideas for Obamacare. And the response from the White House was not interested.
Well, it will take tremendous courage by both sides.
No, what it'll take is, are you a Democrat?
I believe there is truth on both sides.
Are you a Democrat?
I believe there is truth.
Are you ashamed of being a Democrat?
I believe there is truth.
Okay, you know what? You've retreated to the one thing I wanted to ask you, Doug, is you, as a Democrat voter, could shame the people you voted for, Patty Murray, Maria Cantwell, that whole bunch, and say to them, why don't you sit down with the Republicans and give them your ideas for fixing this problem? But if all you'll say is bumper stickers, there's smartness on both sides, or, you know, both sides have something to say. Doug, that's a bumper sticker. You've got to shame these people into it. If you had a buddy and your buddy said, I'm not talking to my girlfriend, I refuse to talk to her, I would hope that you'd have the guts to say, buddy, if you don't want to talk to her, you are part of the problem. And if you won't say that to your elected representatives, then shame on you. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails. Let me get right to that. First of all, let's go to Dave, who's calling in from Vancouver. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, Lars. Dr. Rosenberg, I completely enjoyed his interview. Although
smart guy.
He is. Maybe artificial intelligence is different than what people do. The designer of an awful lot of Boeing airplanes up to the 747, who was completely responsible for the Blackbird, said, Boeing changed from a single individual design, responsible for the design of an airplane to a group. And when he retired, he said, well, there won't be any really horrible airplanes after this, but there won't be any really great ones either.
Now, but tell me the thinking on that, because, I mean, I can imagine that if you have one part of the group is experts in propulsion and another part of the group is experts in the electronic side of things, and somebody else is an expert in how airflow over wings creates lift, and then somebody else is an expert in the guidance of a plane, the control surfaces that guide it up or down or left or right or those things. I guess it'd be great if you had one person who was so expert in all those different fields that one person could guide the design of an entire aircraft. But how do you do it when aircraft are as complicated as they are today? They don't fly at 12,000 feet. They fly at 40 grand. They don't fly at 200 miles an hour. They fly at 600 miles an hour, 500 miles an hour. Can the same guy who designs great engines also design great airfoils?
Well, I'll tell you, I just retired from a government agency. I was self-employed for the first half of my life, and after all of the work was sent to Mexico and China, I ended up working for a government agency.
Yeah.
And that's the epitome of groupthink. I mean, almost nothing went well. The social climbers, were in control of everything, and the people, if you really needed to know what was really going down, you needed to drill down into the part-time workers that were there making almost minimum wage to find out how things really need to go, because the social climbers climbed their way to the top.
Well, that may be true. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Let's go to Bruce in Dallas. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars, how's it going? Great day outside today.
Thank you very much. It's beautiful here in the Northwest. I was glad I got out of Louisiana yesterday because it looks like they're in trouble.
Hey, what I wanted to ask you, you probably got in front of you there, is I had a thought today when I was watching Outnumbered or something on Fox News, and I got to thinking, okay, Trump is the head of the government. He's head of the executive branch. He's Sessions' boss. He's everybody below him, which includes Rosenstein, which includes Mueller.
Yeah.
Okay, now, yeah, Trump would take some heat for doing what I'm about to suggest, and you know what it's going to be, but he also took heat for firing Comey in the first place. He's not afraid to take heat. Why doesn't he just step up to the plate, fire Mueller, say, you know, I mean, if there was anything to go on, and then encourage the Senate and the House, those committees, to investigate him. You know, we don't need Mueller. Nobody seems to want to fire him. I don't know the answer to the question. That's why I called. Maybe you do. Does Trump have the right to fire Mueller?
Yes, he has the right to do it, although it takes extraordinary circumstances, as I understand it, for a special counsel to be fired. And the political consequences of it are greater, because what will happen is the Democrats win if Mueller stays on, because he's clearly hiring a bunch of former Clinton Foundation lawyers and others who have political dogs in the fight. So they win if he stays on. If Trump fires him, then they'll use the fact that he fired him to as an indictment of him, even though when you go back and say, well, what was Mueller's job? To investigate. To investigate what? To investigate Russia's connection to Donald Trump. Well, do we have any indication from anyone at this point that there was a connection, you know, between the Russians influencing Donald Trump or his associates, his campaign people and others? And the answer is no. So then you come back to the first question. Well, then what is he investigating? Well, he's investigating nothing. It's vapor at this point. And I'd remind people, the investigation by the FBI and others began one full year ago. And in one full year, they have found exactly nothing. They know that the Russians tried to influence the outcome of our elections, just as we tried to influence the outcome of the Israeli elections under Obama a couple of years ago. But beyond that, we don't have any evidence whatsoever, according to Dianne Feinstein, according to James Clapper, according to James Comey. We don't have any evidence at all that there was any collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians or Donald Trump's associates and the Russians. So the purpose of Robert Mueller at this point is to hire former Clinton lawyers so they can keep this investigation going as long as possible, because as long as it's going on, they can say, well, the president is under investigation, or his activities are. David Harms joins me now, as he has this afternoon. We're saving lives out there. World Concern takes a meager amount of money, less than 4 bits, and turns it into a pill and clean water for some of the kids around this world who die, 3 or 4 million of them every single year because of parasites. David, how can people help out? We just had a big donation.
Yeah, we did. Thank you to Jason from Ferndale. Stepped in with a gift of $1,100. That's 2,500 kids that are cured with this medicine, and that was part of the doubling. Also stepping in, Douglas, Chris, Christy, and about 11 other people. So thank you very much for that. By the way, we haven't given you a total, but so far today, 70,333 kids are getting this medicine. So
that's fantastic.
Really cool. Now, I admit that I like nice round numbers, so by the top of the hour, I did the math.
You'd like to get to 100,000.
Well, eventually, yes, and beyond. But by the top of the hour, 75,000 kids cured would simply mean if 15 more people could step in with a gift of $132, that would cure, by your gift of $132, that would cure 300 kids. So could you be one of 15 people? But maybe you could be like Justin or Jason. I'm sorry, Jason, who gave a larger amount.
From Ferndale.
Yeah, you could maybe give something like $1,000 or $440. You in and of yourself could cure 1,000 kids. So let me give you the phone number. We've only got about 18 minutes, and I'm going to put that out there. I think there are 15 people that want to cure kids.
Sure,
so
there are.
888-544-5448. So 18 minutes to go. 888-544-5448. I'm trying to think of a football stadium that seats 75,000 or seats them so he can kind of give you the word picture. But that's a lot of kids. But now 15 people, you and 14 others, could you call? 888-544-5448. That $132 gift, 300 kids get the medicine, and maybe you could do more. If you can, please call.
And David Harms with World Concern. If you want more information, go to my website, LarsLarson.com. You'll see a big banner up there, and you should know that 90% of all the dollars raised go directly to the cause, not to anything else, and they get a great four-star rating from Charity Navigator. We'll be back in just a moment. My friend Adam Carolla joins us to talk about why Hollywood won't fund a movie called No Safe Spaces, but he's going to make sure it gets done without Hollywood. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad always to take your calls. We'll get to those a bit later at 866-439-5277. Imagine this. You're one of the most talented, creative guys out there and you want Hollywood to fund your movie. And Hollywood says, no, we're not going to do it. So you have to go out and get it done yourself. He is Adam Carolla. Comedian, podcaster, radio and TV host, author, actor, movie director, and a man of many talents, a real Renaissance man. Adam, it's good to have you back on the program.
Always great to be with you, Lars.
So your advice to President Trump is to buy some earbuds and put handle on the iPod?
Yeah, I was just doing an interview and last week or even this week, it's all such a whirlwind because Prager and I have been out making the rounds. Dennis Prager, that is.
Good man.
No Safe Spaces doc. Good man. A lot of wisdom. Love the wisdom. Boy, it's something we don't talk about anymore. It's horse sense and wisdom. But I was just asked, this sort of out of the blue, what's your advice for Trump? And I said, put in the earbuds, crank up the classical music, and get to work. And I've felt like it's worked well in my own life, and I advise that to everyone. I used to tell people that when they go, hey, the doctor wants me to take these medications because I'm depressed or I'm unhappy or I can't sleep or whatever. I said, put in the earbuds, put on the classical music, and hit the trail. And then get back to me in a month and tell me how you're doing.
Because your conclusion was, and I saw the comment you made, I think it's in Politico, that that otherwise he's going to be in a four-year-long or eight-year-long fight with HuffPo and the folks on the left who are going to do everything they can to flash that shiny object out there.
It's just going to be a perpetual distraction. He's just like a big-mouth bass, and they're a lure, and it's never gonna end. At a certain point, you just have to go, and I'm going to work.
No, and you know, in some ways, this is where I most wish. I'm a fan of Donald Trump. I voted for him. I endorsed him. But I remember that when, you know, reporters and others would say something to President Reagan about what his critics are saying, and he'd say, well, there they go again. You know, it was his way of just essentially dismissing it and saying, yeah, but I'm going to keep on being a great president while they're off with their distractions. I'm just not going to be distracted by it.
It'd be nice. Obviously, he's not wired that way. And by the way, we're coming unwired as a society. I mean, I've never seen adults act more like children in my entire life. There was a decorum, there was a separation, there was everything between being a kid and being an adult when I was a kid. And somehow, it's all been undone.
You know, in line with that, Adam, I was telling my producers this morning, I said, remember when you were in junior high and somebody would wear the wrong kind of jeans or, they wore Nikes instead of Adidas or they wore their baseball cap the wrong way and it became a big issue. Oh, my God. Or somebody's associating with the wrong person or the wrong crowd, and you're not with the cool kids anymore. And I see these memes like the one on Marco Rubio trying to give Ivanka Trump a hug. And the, you know, the Twitter universe comes unglued that Ivanka was not as engaged in that hug as Marco Rubio was. And this is what we're talking about? Well, we've got North Korea building nuclear weapons and sending, dead Americans home?
I marvel at this all day, every day. And, maybe it's just my own narcissism. But when everybody gets their panties in the bunch over Cecil the Lion and they expect me to set myself on fire, I say, I don't care. I got kids. I got a mortgage. I feel bad for Cecil, but that's as far as I'm going with it. And it drives me insane that they just move on to the next thing, and the next thing is nothing. And there's so much. But I realized I interviewed the guy who's probably going to be the next governor of California, Gavin Newsom. And Gavin Newsom proudly boasted my podcast that he liked working small to big. And I explained to him, I'm the exact opposite. And if you're a politician, I want you to start working on LA's traffic problem. And then we can get back to, at some point, when the schools are working, the potholes are filled, and every community is safe to go for a walk in the night with your child. Then we can work on abolishing Columbus Day and replacing it with Indigenous Peoples Day.
Adam, before we run out of time, I want you to tell my audience about No Safe Spaces, this movie that you want to make that Hollywood's refusing to fund, and how you're giving folks an opportunity to help you get it across the finish line.
Yeah, Dennis Prager is, I've always been a fan of his, and he never knew who I was, because why would he? Eventually, we became friends. We're the most two different people on the planet. You couldn't get a bigger chasm between us, but we love each other's sense of wisdom. And movie together about what's going on college campuses and the safe spaces and all the little snowflakes we're raising. And so we decided to do it. And we're doing a crowdfunding campaign because, as we said, Hollywood would never make this movie. And you can go to NoSafeSpaces.com and contribute. And they have lots of fun rewards.
Well, I was going to bring that up. You've got some cool tchotchkes for people who decide to give you even a little bit of money.
Yeah, so I think it starts at $10 and goes up to, you know, having drinks with me or smoking a cigar with Dennis Prager or whatever it is. But it's all there. And there's some really good little videos there, just two-minute-long videos. This is snippets from me and Dennis Prager speaking at Cal State Northridge a couple of months back. And if your audience wants to get an idea of our dynamic together, they should would definitely encourage them to watch those very short videos, which are at NoSafeSpaces.com. I think they'll like them.
Well, I've had the opportunity to smoke a cigar, too, with Dennis Prager when we've been at events together. And he's a great guy, and he's a wonderful conversationalist. And I can't imagine a better duo to make this whole project happen. Adam, congratulations for all your success. And I'll add a few dollars to the No Safe Spaces effort because I want you to get across that finish line.
Thanks, Lars. I appreciate it.
You bet. Adam Carolla with us. Glad to be with you. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-439-5277. You can follow me on Twitter at Lars Larson Show, on Facebook at The Lars Larson Show. You can podcast the program from our SoundCloud account, and we always invite you to visit the website at LarsLarson.com.